Okay, so this is Teresa Deitze and David Franco with Practical Work on Self, Chapter and Session 3, Negative Manifestation. And we have a few people on the call, not too many, so you'll have to feel free to participate a lot. And that's all I have to say at the moment. David, what would you like to start with today? Would you like me
Like
to
to
read
ask.
the beginning of the header of the chapter? Okay.
No. Hey, first of all, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. And that way I can just lean back ever so slightly here in the way it's set up. Part of what I wanted to do is that the first part of the class actually should be a discussion of last week's chapter. And some of us came up with exercises that we were going to try during this week. Last week was a very long time ago. We may have forgotten that part. But in any event, last week we were doing an exercise from a chapter called The Pond, Chapter 2. And one of the ideas in The Pond was to find a recurring event where you have you know that they're going to have a particular emotional response. The question was, take your same machine into that same event and see what happens. And use this technique called parting of the Red Sea, and then report back to see if you can go into the identical event where you have the same mechanical reaction, and you're coming differently to it. Can you observe something different, or is there a possibility for there to be a difference in that scenario? Some people then indicated that they were going to do the exercise in a particular manner, and I don't know if they're on the call tonight or on the broadcast, but it would be interesting to see if anybody tried the exercise and what their response was. That's where I'd like to start, if possible.
Okay, so for the people who are online, feel free to type in your responses and I will read them to David. And does anybody on the phone have something that they'd like to say? Okay, path world. Guilty, I didn't do it.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're going to let you know that you are guilty, but there's nothing we can do about the guilt, but
Not
it's
until we
done
get to
anyway.
the negative manifestations.
That we'll cover that in chapter 3. Anyway, welcome. I'm glad you're here, Jenny.
Mark Roach, I tried the exercise, found it invaluable.
Excellent.
Silverdale, great MR. I don't know what an MR is.
Mark Roach.
Oh, great,
Mark,
Mark Roach. Okay, duh.
are you able to expand a little bit? Can you tell us any of the functionality of it or how what you did? And I'm interested in learning about that. I see.
Mark says, first it made me much more aware of how often there ordinarily are negative reactions. That an eye opener and very useful.
Good. Is that it?
Yes.
Forepaws was going to have a coffee with her mother, I think, but I don't know what happened with that. And I don't remember the other
Oh,
choices.
Mark has more. Sorry.
Okay.
And even though I failed at adequately parting the sea, let's give him a minute to finish the comment. Well, that's what we have showing up so far.
Okay, good.
Oh, here. Just having the awareness of doing the exercise gave a sort of built-in detachment and made it much easier to be calm in the face of stuff.
Good. I'll make a comment on that point in itself. Just the acknowledgement of the exercise and the fact that the exercise is there and available is something important in itself. It actually, in my experience, it puts the machine on notice in a sense that something is different, that the landscape isn't exactly the same. So if you read the exercise, take the exercise in, that's maybe as much as we can do at this point. And so be it. That's all we can do. And later we try to bring the exercise to bear in other manners.
Pathworld says, yes, I agree, just acknowledging that something is different.
Yeah. Okay. I was going to do the exercise. If I commented that every time I'm in a situation where I'm with people that have really bad, let's say, loud eating habits, that I have a reaction, and that I was going to observe that during this week. And I'm not sure exactly what happened, but I didn't have such an experience at all this week. Maybe I avoided everybody, or I just didn't. It was possible that I didn't eat or dine with anybody who had such habits, but I didn't have a chance of trying it. But in any event, you know, that's. Let's say I'm holding it on the shelf. It's still in play for me. Okay.
It's a little strange because your timing is out of sync with the visuals, with your voice so much. I thought the mic was dead for a minute. Okay, Mark Roach add another comment. It was a godsend in that all the zillions of things that come up in the day that seem like obstructions and interruptions now become opportunities for doing the work, and hence are not really so obstructive anymore. The interruptions become the work, which I'll really second the feeling of that. I experienced that quite a lot. And Ad Lusum said, I had your experience, David. And Ginger Rogers, very nice, kind of Zen Mark.
So just an observation there. What we see then with an individual like Mark is that he's gone beyond the stage of purely defending the ego of the machine to seeing, to having the beginnings of an interest and desire for awakening the machine and being in another level. Therefore, those things become opportunities. And there's an interesting letter, Mark and other everybody else, that Spinoza was basically a recluse, and even though he was well liked, but he was a recluse. But he wrote a lot of letters, and he wrote a letter to his friend, and in the letter he says, "When I come upon yet another infirmity," he says, "I have joy because I know that it's an area I can work on." I mean, he said in his own words, he actually spoke in Dutch and wrote in Latin, but interesting. So he was on the other side, and Mark is telling us that that's where he's viewing things at also. So it's a mentality, a mental position that you get to where you're holding that in such a way that you walk through life differently, actually. And all 24 of these exercises are meant to be held online throughout. Once we start doing them, they can become part of our entire I call it a tool belt that we walk along with. Okay?
Like regular Batman. Okay, Mark Roach added, even though I still failed at the exercise most of the time, I would like to add that having had that same experience, I go back and forth between feeling like I'm really doing it because I'm noticing that the obstructions and interruptions are opportunities, and I can even get excited about feeling and catching some of the states that otherwise might be just unmitigated unpleasantness to feel on the inside. And I can't really call that a failure. Sometimes I feel like maybe I failed at remembering exactly what it was I was supposed to be working on, but one way or the other, the work seems to be proceeding, if not because of me, then in spite of me.
Right. And that's very good. And the phrase that comes to me is this effort at understanding. The effort at understanding is virtue itself. So as long as we continue to apply some form of effort, we're making a little progress in ourselves. So, you know, we can't use the same external ego metrics, so to speak, to measure our progress in the work. It's a different circumstance altogether.
Can you explain what you mean by the same kind of ego metrics?
Yeah, I mean, let's say in life, in the world, and in the so much of success, I am a success, I'm a failure, is dictated by external events. I've made a lot of money. I won the Nobel Prize. I've been appointed to the chair of such and such at my college. And so you can point to that and you say, oh, see, I have done ABC. And the implicit statement there is, in parenthesis, therefore I am something. So those are external metrics. You know, I have a family. I have children. Whatever it is, people hold up, and you have to have a little compassion here, that when people hold up anything and to say, see, I am something, that's an external metric.
Okay. Or I would add, I have the approval of another person to that, because that's kind of constant.
Well, yeah, okay, that would be another example. This person approves of me, or, you know, 10,000 people voted for me, or signed on to my website.
Well, it could even be I did it right.
Pardon?
I did it right.
Whatever I did it right means, like, you can do it right in terms of an external achievement, but you got it wrong internally. And we're looking at internal metrics. We're trying to find an internal measuring stick. It is possible to find an internal measuring stick. An example of an internal measuring stick is what Mark, he's starting to observe, that he goes about in the chaos of life, battered about by his own emotions, but he's not just sinking on the ship of those emotions. And guess what? Guess what? Invariably, he's actually seeing those as emotions and the drama of the sea, so to speak. He's seeing that. Most of us go through life and they don't see anything. I remember being in a class with a fellow, and this was early, early on when I was in a different group altogether, and the guy, he understood he had these feelings inside, but he identified it as self-pity, but he never even knew what that meant. He just knew that there was something going on in him, and he understood later that he was highly subject to the ocean of self-pity.
So what does it mean to do it wrong internally?
Well, If you do, I don't know. I mean, that would be on a case-by-case basis, but an example might be, I did this particular effort in order to get external approval. I did this in order to be named, number one in my class, or I did this just because I wanted to be first. I didn't do it because of a kind of a love and passion for the internal effort of it. And so it's your stance internally is different, is what I'm trying to maintain here. I'm happy,
So,
I'm open to other comments, though.
you might say that that was what you're referring to when you call an invocation. It's a different invocation.
Well, it's fundamentally different. It's fundamentally, in a certain way for me, if you're externally motivated 100%, I would not call that an invocation. I would not call it that there's any invocation of the higher whatsoever in there.
What you're
But
trying to get and attract. So Silverdale said it really is the fable of the tortoise and the hare. Slow and steady produces evolutionary transformation. And
Yeah,
then,
and
oh, Happy Mist says, but that is what I do, not who I am. And that's been seconded.
good, good comments.
And Four Paws has showed up.
Good.
Four Paws, David asked earlier whether you had managed to have lunch with or breakfast with your mom.
Coffee. We were talking about you earlier, Four Paws, because we knew you weren't there. And you can't see the log before, so you can't see what we actually said. But that's okay.
She's laughing. Mark Roach is working on another comment here.
Okay.
Four Paws says, I hope it's all bad. Mark Roach says, the other somewhat startling observation I had was, and now we're in suspense while he finishes the comment. And it's not showing up right away, so if you have something you want to say, we can certainly come back to it. Oh, here it is.
No, we
The other somewhat startling observation I had was that it seems that this exercise practice can then be applied even to our own internal negativities, etc., even when there is no external cause. Yes, I've very much found that to be the case and can kind of
Can you
get going
expand
on
on
that all
that?
day. Can I what?
And who said that?
Mark Roach said that.
Hey, can you ex either one of you expand on that, please?
He can work on writing something, and I'll say something in the meantime.
Thank you.
The internal negativities come up, and when the internal negativities come up, then parting the Red Sea for troublesome or negative internal thoughts and feelings. That's his words, but I'm talking about the same thing. We seem to have kind of similar experience with that one thing.
Okay, and I guess I'm not getting it.
Well, the situation is going through, and I'll speak for myself, and going through the day with the work wish, wanting to do the exercise, but maybe not quite getting to actually remembering exactly to do it, but having gone through the book before, at least paying attention to the negative emotions and all the little issues and all the negative manifestations that come up, and then parting the Red Sea as those internal thoughts and feelings come up, and then to go into his words, i.e., a more accepting and merging with our own energies, not just the negativities of others, and then back to my
Okay.
own paying attention to our own inner negativity at the same time, applying the same technique. Miss more
Concise
comments.
manner.
And happiness that internal negatives do not always need external stimulus, and Mark Roach, rather than fighting against them.
Let me make a teeny bit of a comment on happiness, what she said. It, in a sense, it doesn't always need an external trigger, but the trigger is almost always external, even though it might not be in the room with you at that moment. It'll be from something out of the past that, it appears that it's not right now external.
She's saying aha, and that's a very good distinction.
Yeah. Teresa, do you have are you using a mouse, a headset?
Yes.
Can you pull the microphone slightly further away from your mouth? See if that we're getting a crackle here on the
Is this
pickup.
better?
I think it might be. Let's just try it. Okay.
Okay, let me know. And Four Paws wanted us to know that she did have coffee with her, but there were no emotions any which way.
Who paid for the coffee? I had an emotion when you had it, when you had coffee with your mom.
She just
The
added
thought of it.
she did. Four Plus,
Good.
does that mean that your mother had emotions, but you didn't really have any? Which way? She's
Okay.
laughing.
All right. Well, that was. All
Mark
right. Good
Roach, I
stuff.
have to go see you all next week. Can someone
Thank
please
you,
send me
Mark.
the blog? Bye, Mom. Mark will miss you.
Take care. Mark Roach. How are we doing?
And Four Paws is saying, yes, she probably did have some emotions. I think mine have died.
Well,
You might
that.
need those to do the work.
Pardon?
I said you might need those to do the work. The emotions are a great source of fuel for the work.
Here's just the possibility of an observation, okay? And that's, well, this is an observation. The possibility is whether it's correct or not. You'll have to find that out. The observation is you brought this up a week ago as a kind of a predictable area where an emotional event might occur. And I would say that your observation at the time was probably correct. So keep it in mind to try again and see if anything comes up. I'd be interested to hear from you if that's the case. I would say your marker was probably correct. The fact that it didn't come up this time, we don't know why. In a certain way, this is, I don't want it to sound too mystical, but it may have been hiding because you put it on notice. Just try it again as a possibility.
I think the correct word is lurking.
All of that. Okay.
She
Very
says,
nice.
okay, I'll try again. Thank you.
Okay.
And Ginger Rogers, heck, I think I'll reread the Bible where they part the Red Sea. I'm kind of literal.
No, that would be good. I'd love for someone to read it, and yeah, I wouldn't suggest just relying on the Charlton Heston version of it, but actually open up the Bible. It's so funny. I read Genesis about 2 weeks ago, and it was very different than the myth of it that's going around all the time. It's worth it to read that section and find out what actually was said between Moses, how it happened and why it happened. It's a very fascinating story Molly is telling us. So it's worth reading it and getting away from the myth of how we think it should be or what it was. Parting the Red Sea, there you go. Can we let the sea come back and landed on the enemies? That was exactly what they did in compassionate. Those poor soldiers and their families. So there you go.
So would we like to move into the next chapter at this point?
Well, it makes me nervous even thinking about it, but go ahead.
I don't think you're alone in that. Or maybe your manifestations are more negative than everybody else's, David.
They are. My manifestations are much more negative than anybody else's, okay?
Now that we have that straight. Okay. Or no, I could compete with you on that really hard. That's one of my negative manifestations. I've got to compete. So, no. Okay. Negative manifestation, chapter 3. This is the header. Almost everything we say and do is some form of negative emotion, whether we recognize it as such or not. Posture, gesture, and facial mask are all inexhaustible sources of negative manifestations.
I'm going to read the first paragraph and then I'm going to make a comment. In general, negative manifestations of the machine are the mental centrum's exaggerated simulation of what it imagines an emotion might be, like if it had one. In accordance with the mental centrum's suggestibility to organic spasms occurring in the motor centrum. This is like, you know, if we read the first phrase in the header there, almost everything we say or do is some form of negative emotion. Almost everything we say or do, whether we recognize it as such or not, I mean, you know, go ahead and go to the mall, as you might usually do, you know, on a daily basis and hang out. And read this paragraph to somebody and see what they're going to say. Or go to your coworkers and say, guess what? Almost everything we say or do is some form of negative emotion, whether we recognize it as such or not. How, I mean, doesn't that just shock you? Do you actually, first of all, do you even marginally believe it?
Dead
In general,
silence.
What?
Dead silence.
Yeah, really. In general, negative manifestations of the machine. Here's the out. Everybody needs an out, right? In general, negative manifestations of the machine are the mental centrum's exaggerated simulation of what it imagines an emotion might be, as if it had had one, you know, in accordance with the mental centrum suggestibility to organic spasms occurring in the motor centrum. Now, we covered this in Chapter 2, all right? We covered this in Chapter 2 where we said there's some event occurs, some muscular event occurs, and then we have an idea thereof. Now,
okay, we have some comments
comes,
coming in when you're ready.
Yeah, hang on, just one quick second.
Okay.
We have an idea thereof, and the idea is formed with the best tools we have at the time, which, as we're growing up, are very limited. Because where do we get most of our knowledge? Our friends and our family, who don't have any training in this form of work whatsoever. Their only training they have is surviving in the world for the sake of the world. So it's a mental centrum interpretation of a body modification. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so starting when we were, I think, I'm imagining when we were competing for the worst negative manifestations, the Zen added Spiritual Olympics, the event of negative manifestation toss. And then Sinhog, then get ready to duck. And Forepaws, yes, that's really big. And no, I can't believe it. And Ginger Rogers, well, even our body machines are outer phenomenal mechanisms, not our reality. And Happy Mist, maybe better than half. Zazen, yes. And Silverdale, all manifestations which are involuntary and unconscious are to be regarded to be ne are regarded to be negative. All manifestations which are involuntary and unconscious are regarded to be negative. That's right from the book. The Ginger Rogers, the machines would like to be reality, but really they aren't ours. We just working with them.
Funny.
That's true. And Silverdale, the trick is to have the non-phenomenal part of ourselves consciously and voluntarily produce manifestations. And Ginger Rogers, yes, then we must make friends with ourself, machine and essential selves working together. And Zazen, the expressions are wrongly associative.
Yeah, and don't forget the answer. So I had written down there what is the definition of negative emotion, and Silverdale gave us that. And the conflict is well stated by Ginger Rogers there.
And for me, as far as
Get that in.
whether I can believe it, I'm forced to believe it when I go into focused enough self-observation. I feel like I'm drowning in the Red Sea if I forget to part it.
Yeah, I mean, basically, we're awash with this stuff, and truthfully, we don't believe it, and we don't believe it. There's so much of the negative emotions going on, we fall asleep to it. Now, the definition that was given by Silverdale is the answer to my question of what is a negative emotion, and I think it's important for all of us here. And I do hope that Mark gets a copy of this log, by the way. It's important for all of us to understand this is a technical definition in the context of this kind of work that we're doing, okay? So all reactivity is, in fact, a negative emotion. If it's a reaction, if it's just we react to something, that is the negative emotion. And that's what we launch off with here in chapter 3.
I'd like to
Go
add
ahead.
that even if it doesn't necessarily feel negative right in that moment, what can it could be negative just in as much as it can take the place of the non-phenomenal self and having the experience of the non-phenomenal self by kind of crowding out other awareness.
You need to be careful. The quote unquote negative emotion might feel very good. It's the fact that it's reactive that's the issue, not how that it feels bad. We want to concentrate on the bad negative emotions because, gosh, it hurts. But in fact, any reactivity is the issue.
Like defensive pride. Defensive pride might feel like, whoa, I'm standing up for myself at last.
Or somebody, you know, you're in your, somebody like approves of you and you just beam. You know, you just beam with no control at all. You just, and suddenly, you know, that feels pretty darn good. But it's the same kind of reaction that you have when you're in a downer state. That's my point.
Okay, Ginger Rogers asks, which expression? This is Molly Janna tonight. I'm curious what you mean. Let us know whether we've answered that. There's a few more comments. Zazen, I may have meant expression or emotion. Ginger Rogers, too bad negative emotion sounds like badness. It isn't. It just is.
Correct.
And that's
Well
great
put.
comment. And Zazen, I perceive an event with a vague idea feeling with a vague idea feeling within myself. Then look within for a similar event feeling and name it that.
Very funny. Very good. Very good. And read the Ginger Rogers or Janice again, Molly. This is the last one that she
Which
said.
expressions? I'm curious what you mean. Too bad negative emotion sounds like badness. It isn't bad. It just is.
That's right. That's right. And ultimately, we have to get to that point of equanimity where we see it just is.
Well, we
But
judge
we
it and we call it negative. On one hand, it helps to provide stimulus for the work, and on the other hand, it can lead into judging and sort of snowballing of different negative emotions as we start potentially condemning ourselves from feeling for feeling that way, and then we lose the opportunity to observe from a more detached place.
Be very careful here. We all have to be careful. Just because the word negative is used, it does not mean bad feelings. It's just reactive feelings. This, I mean, it's, we don't want, we just want to look at the part where we feel downers or bad or negative or, I mean, in a classical sense. Silverdale, go back and read Silverdale's definition. That is the fundamental technical definition. It's a reactivity. We react to something. I mean, if, like I say, a common one is when you're given praise, and I was in front of a group and it was happened to be in one of the institute group meetings, and I was being given praise, and I could see myself puffing up. And I said, "Well, my ego thanks you, and I thank you." Because that was reactive at that moment. It was just like a big puffed up rooster. But it felt great, right? So it's reactivity. And we have to have a little bit of a good sense of this because as we walk through this chapter here, we have to work with this stuff in a little bit. So anyway, go ahead.
Silverdale's comment again, all manifestations which are involuntary and unconscious are regarded to be negative. And also, Ginger Rogers was saying it's more like in physics. And Gopals, I hope I'm saying that right, agree, Jhana, eternal physics, the mall is the agora of thousands of years ago, the exact same space. I'm not sure what an agora is. Ginger Rogers, like electrons, negative charge, protons, positive charge, a polarity is necessary. Yeah, good, great, thanks. Plus, if there was no reactivity, there would be no need for this class, or there would be no universe because if there were not those two poles and charges. I added that part. Zazen, okay.
Let me comment. Hang on. Let me comment on that point. That is a critical point. Who made that point about if we there were
Ginger
no
Rogers
negative?
does. The next comment is part with it. It was does in it can describe a charge electrically. It may be
Oh, no.
negative charge with a positive potential. In Tai Chi, we call this the negative positive, and then negative is in quotes.
Okay. Let me comment back on what Ginger Rogers said. The point is, in a certain way, we're gifted with the sleeping machine. We're gifted with these, with this unconscious, reactive situation, because then that is the food upon which the eternal attention, the sun attention, can come to bear, and then we have a chance to grow at that point. Because without this field of opportunity in front of us, they're not, we would just sit there and bay at the moon, so to speak. It gives us a chance to come alive. I'm thankful that we have this because we can then give the opportunity to overcome.
Yeah, that was really nicely stated, David. You're getting a lot of good feedback around that. Very beautiful and compassionate.
I do bay at the moon at times, and
well,
there's nothing wrong.
That was, I think EJ was saying at some point in the book that without negative emotion, we would stand barefoot in the grass and bay at the moon or something like that.
Well, all traditions say this. You see it in many, many traditions. It's when you ultimately get to start working on pure observation and you start to see, in fact, all of this stuff, that's the food. We eat that food. It becomes essential food.
And LMWI said, the knowledge that reactivity can be used to feed our simple presence helps us to see it in another light. That's very nice.
Did we do a roll call, by the way?
Now?
Oh, that is Mike Williamson? Okay. Okay, that's a good point. That was a nice one. I kind of a little bit want to move on, but I mean, I'm going to be covering some of these exact points, okay? But
you
I want to move
guy.
To the book slightly. That makes sense? Okay, I'm jumping to page 39. The personality of the machine, which is to say its sense of personal identity, is a complex formation of automatically proceeding categorical associations of each of the three lower centrums, the results of organic and psychological conditioning. Okay, that's what we find ourselves there, okay? That's where we're at. But thank God, in a certain way, that we have found ourselves there. We have found ourselves. Jumping ahead, it is a simple presence with no particular identity, no particular qualities, although it may, I'm sorry, I'll back up. I'm going to give that to you again. The real master of the machine, the non-phenomenal self, which is the real source of attention and presence, is very different from the complex personal identity of the machine. It is a simple presence with no particular identity, no particular qualities, although it may take on itself the qualities of its host machine for a short period of time. There's kind of a, what can I call it, an after image, okay? There's an after image as the machine starts to wake up of the machine. It kind of continues. That anybody that looks closely, I mean, it's like you go to your mom 20 years later after working on yourself, and she goes, oh, hi there, you know, son, hi there, daughter. It looks like the same person. They may be seeing the same person, but they also notice fundamentally different things. To continue, unlike the personal identity of the machine, the real self has no need for embellishment. It is in this world, but it is not of it. I'm jumping ahead to page 40. The machine seems to have a virtually inexhaustible repertoire of postures, gestures, facial masks, which can, without actually saying anything, subtly express negative emotions. These subtle manifestations of the machine should be closely observed with the ordinary attention of not making any attempt to use a supernormal attention at this time. Does this paragraph make sense? The machine seems to have a virtually inexhaustible repertoire of postures, gestures, and facial masks.
So just in case, depending who's listening when, what would you call the supernormal attention?
Well, that's what we were talking about in terms of the before, the non-phenomenal self, the real source of attention. We're coming to that. We're beginning to grow that. But right now I'm interested in just the actual machine itself as an inexhaustible, you know, the machine being mechanical nothingness, that is, enslaves itself to whatever mood happens to be suggested by whatever motor central happens to be proceeding at the time. So totally reactive. It's unconscious. It's asleep. Okay. These postures and their emotional reverberations occur in an exact and predictable sequence according to the law of the optic, and we can observe them if we understand this automatic sequence and know where to look next.
Okay, can you tell us what the law of the octave is?
Sorry?
Can you tell us what the law of the octave is?
Well, can I finish the sentence?
No.
Let me just finish reading that sentence. I mean, it's all in one sentence, and then we'll go back and,
okay.
And parse. Okay, I'll give it to you again. Postures, these postures and their emotional reverberations occur in an exact and predictable sequence according to the law of the octave, which we can observe, and we can observe them if we understand this automatic sequence and know where to look next, which is to say, if we can predict the flow of tensions, we can follow the sequence with our attentions, with our attention. In this, okay, go ahead.
So there will be some people listening who would like to know what the law of the octave is.
I'm not sure that I'm prepared to give a decent definition of it at this point. And if somebody would like to do that, they can. I don't think I'm prepared to do that.
Okay.
Okay? But I guarantee you, you don't need to know that to do this exercise.
That's true. So we could suffice it, I think, to say that we're just looking for the way that sensations and mood and all of the postures, all of these different things flow out of the initial reaction. The sequence that they flow from the initial reaction.
The control, then to jump ahead on page 41, control of the machine's manifestations is not our aim now or later. This is really important. The control of the machine's manifestations. We're not trying to control the manifestations of the machine. Later, the behavior patterns may change when we observe from the non-phenomenal self. Okay. And although the effect is slow to assert itself, eventually the attention of the non-phenomenal self upon the machine produces definite changes in the machine. And I wrote down there, if people want to give examples of that or how they may see that occur. So there's the manifestations of the machine itself, and then we gradually over time apply the attention of the non-phenomenal self on it, and it does produce change. Something starts to happen. And I know there's a few people that can speak to that point.
At this point, we have one comment from Ginger Rogers. We just kind of watch ourselves as characters in a play or a movie.
Good point. And that's exactly how it's put in about 5 or 6 pages. Exactly like that. Okay? So that's exactly right. For our purposes at this level, we just need to look at watching ourselves. We just have to start using something different. We're watching this thing here. We're watching this thing. Okay? That's what we're going to do. Each one of us, and this is an interesting paragraph. I'm on 41, middle of the page. Every one of us is living and working independently toward personal evolution, is forced sooner or later to realize that the manifestations of their machine have their origin in an inaccessible monastery, which we cannot penetrate in the ordinary way. Yet, unless we are able to penetrate this monastery and take command of the machine, we will never develop the will to awaken the machine.
Can we
Suppose,
talk about why we're calling it a monastery?
I think just in a figurative sense, it's a monastery in the sense of an inaccessible monastery might be a monastery that, like up in the mountains, you can't ever get to it. You don't know how to get to it, but you know it's there, and you know something's going on there. So just from that literary, it's just a literary matter, I think, a device that's being used. The point is, unless we penetrate it at some point, we don't have a chance to go forward. This chapter here, chapter 3, negative emotions, or negative manifestation, is like kind of the heart of some of these 24 exercises. We've been given a giant clue to start with, in a sense, with the pond in chapter 2 there, the giant clue. But then the author comes and slaps us on the side of the head, and he says, everything, for almost everything we say or do is from some form of a negative emotion.
I'd like to say more, actually, about the monastery myself.
Yeah, go ahead.
I see EJ is often very specific about the words that he uses, and some of them bear fruit with contemplation, and I've actually like to contemplate the word monastery in this context. And the way I look at it is that there's different monasteries for each parts of ourselves. The body is a monastery with hidden secrets. The emotions are a monastery where we may go away inside and protect our feelings from view, either through denial inwardly or outwardly with other people. And we may go in and the mind can be a monastery where we go away for retreat and don't really reflect outward into the world, but do what we do internally, whether we're aware of it or not. And I just think there's a lot of interesting implications there. Now, Silverdale has added, the hidden monastery refers to our non-phenomenal essence, which is exceedingly hard to discover and entered by the phenomenal part of ourselves. So, yeah, there's just that word is very, yes, Zazen's adding in too. A place that we need permission or experience to enter. Yes, I see the phenomenal self being fed by the energies, not dissipated, but contained through focuses used in these exercises.
Because the mental centrum is completely inaccessible directly, but can be used as a source of attention for the observation of the motor centrum, and the emotional centrum is completely non-existent in the ordinary human, the motor centrum is the most accessible monastery of the inner workings of the machine. And here, and I appreciate the manner in which Teresa mentioned the physical moving center, you know, and the depth that it can take us, and there's no question that that's the case. But we're also saying that just in a gross manifestation manner whatsoever, to watch the machine. That's what's just, what does the physical thing do? What does this physical thing do under different circumstances? So it makes it easy in a sense. We don't have to penetrate to certain levels because right now, we can do stuff. We can observe ourselves. We can observe the machine in different contexts. And what is the method given right here in this chapter? The method is to have the mental centrum observe how the physical thing actually operates. Simple as that. Okay? Just that's, there are a lot of layers here. There's no question.